do something that is different. And you look at all the heroes, and that's what they do.
The commitment to listen with the same passion with which we want to be heard.
In terms of who do you want to be, articulate that. Mm. Find the words behind that. Who do you want to be?
Welcome to another episode of the DNA of Purpose podcast. For our regular listeners, you may remember a few episodes back, we interviewed the incredible Andrew Leach, the co-founder of Brave Spaces. Today, we are in for an equally special treat, meeting the other half of the incredible duo who have made it their business to empower self-discovery, purpose, and connection in the world. Her name is Jacinta McDonnell, and it's fair to say that she is nothing short of a superstar in her journey as one of Australia's most prominent entrepreneurs. All of that said, in my view, what truly stands out about Jack is her innate ability to look within and harness the mindset tools and practices that allow her to create Brave Spaces that truly empower and elevate the potential of individuals, communities, and cultures. To give you some background context, Jacinta made her mark in the world of business when she launched the highly successful US franchise Anytime Fitness into the Australian market in 2008 alongside her brother Justin. Under their leadership, Anytime Fitness grew to become Australia's number one health club chain with over 500 clubs nationwide. As with many of our guests, Jack is a purpose-driven pioneer with a passion for using business as a force for good. She established and ran the Humankind Project from 2015 to 2020, a non-for-profit foundation that funds life-changing projects in Africa and India. The Humankind Project connected projects to businesses to build brand equity while creating lasting social change by supporting the Hunger Project, an organization for which Jack continues to serve as a national board member. Today, she continues to challenge the way we view business, purpose, and leadership. She shares her insights and expertise through speaking engagements, coaching other founders to grow and scale through her consulting business, A Founder's Path, and more recently, Brave Spaces, which provides transformative programs and experiences to empower individuals to lead more purposeful and authentic lives. Now, in today's conversation, Jack and I went deep. We explored why self-awareness is crucial for leadership and personal growth. We decoded courage, self-regulation, connection, purpose, and we looked at how we integrate those big, transformative aha moments in our lives to learn more deeply, to lean more deeply into the creation of a fulfilling and meaningful existence. And really, that was just the beginning. Get ready for an awesome interview with the one and only Jacinta McDonnell. Welcome to the DNA of Purpose podcast, Jacinta McDonnell. It is such a joy. I am literally so excited to have you here in the studio with me today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for asking me.
Oh, you are so welcome. Now, I want to kick off with a question that I ask all of my guests, and it is simply this. What question is currently guiding your life and your work forwards at this exact moment in time?
That is an amazing question. I think for me it is, does this bring me closer towards the, I guess, what I should be expressing into the world, or is this taking me away from what I believe I should be expressing into the world? Because I think that a lot of the time we can get distracted. There's opportunities. There's lots of people around us that can want our time and our energy and our focus. And I think our biggest challenge, for me, my biggest challenge is always coming back to, is this really towards my highest purpose, this time and this energy and this focus and this project? Or am I allowing myself to be pulled towards what maybe is someone else's purpose or what someone else may be trying to achieve? And I think for me, it's always coming back to clarity of purpose. And is this really moving the dial? Is this really going to push me forward, or is this a distraction? Because I think it's so easy to be distracted by shiny things or amazing new opportunities. Whereas it's like, if we really sit with ourselves, it is, okay, is this something that I truly should be doing? Or is this something that seems exciting, but is not really pulling me towards my highest, highest self? So I think for me, it's just clarity, pausing, and making sure that it's towards my North Star.
Such a beautiful way to start today's conversation, in the sense that so much of what you're talking about there is around that deep alignment to purpose. But more than that, it's also about having the ability to really tune into that inner voice and to really hear it, honour it, and create space for it. Because as you're saying, it is so easy to get completely pulled off track by these bright, sparkly objects. Yeah. How do you go about really tuning into that voice so that when it speaks, you're listening?
I think I'm so grateful. I'm turning 50 next month.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And it's such a beautiful time in my life because I feel like I've spent so long getting attuned to that voice and being able to tap into it that I feel very, very grateful to have better access to it now. But like, you know, it takes time and energy to be able to really harness that. And I think that through probably now, how old's my daughter, 13, probably 14 years of I think, you know, deeper self-discovery work, I've now got more access to it. It's not that it's really loud, because I don't believe that voice is really loud, but it's pretty persistent if we listen. And it's those, I guess it's those rituals and those things that we put into our daily practices that enables us to tap into it. So I feel like I've now got more of a handle, not a total handle on it, but more of a handle in terms of what does it sound like? What does it feel like in my body when I'm aligned and when I'm not aligned? Because I think that that's something that we can easily tap into when we learn. What are the sensations when I'm in flow? What are the sensations when I'm off purpose? And we can only do that with age, right? And I think that's why I love getting older, because I'm like, I've got these memories of like, oh, I know how that felt when that was, you know, I was really on purpose there. And I know now when I'm in my body, I'm like, something's not right. So I think it's such a beautiful thing to be able to have those touch points in our past of when we've been on and off.
Yeah,
purpose,
exactly.
To be able to then go, how am I feeling in my body today? And then really, really trusting that we're either on or off, or what do we need to slightly tweak?
Yeah, it's like all of those experiences enable you to develop a kind of energy intelligence where you get 100%. Much better at being able to read those feelings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Mm. So, Jack, we are going to unpack all of this and more. I have loads of questions today, not only breaking down the five keys of Brave Spaces, which we're going to dive right in there, because as you would know from my previous conversation with Andrew and our conversations, I just love what you guys are doing in the world. And it's full of the tools and insights and mindset shifts required to build up energetic intelligence. Yeah. So we'll be exploring that. But I'm going to jump back in time.
Yes.
Now, I know that you grew up in Windsor. I was also a Windsor girl, just as a side note.
Wow.
Yeah, my parents owned property in Ebenezer, which is just outside Windsor. So I know the Windsor area really well. I know that you had incredibly hardworking parents who also worked in the fitness industry. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how those early experiences really enabled you to crystallize your values and catalyze your purpose in the world.
Yeah, I think growing up, you know, we had acreage and we had horses. So I was very lucky to have space as a very young child. So I think that is something that I really cherish still. But I think watching mum and dad, and especially my dad had so many businesses as I was growing up, and just watching him never really be concerned about that he would figure it out. And he had lots of different types of businesses, not just the fitness industry. So I think I learnt from him and my dad's attitude. He's this hugely optimistic, charismatic, you know, big personality. But he was always, you know, if you want to do something, you just have to apply yourself and you just have to work really hard and you can do it. So his belief of that, and he embodied that, was something that I think I took on at a really young age. I didn't enjoy school. I'm not at all a traditional student. And so I struggled at school to, like, you know, to, like, what is the relevance of, like, why am I never really understood, you know, why am I learning this? I'm never going to use this in my life.
So what's the application here?
I was that student.
Yeah.
And so I always knew that I would do my own thing. I never really felt like I would have a job in a traditional sense. So I, from a very young age, I think my dad was really very entrepreneurial. So I think I think the hard work piece, I saw my mum and dad both work really hard. But I think the belief that I could do what I wanted to do came a lot from my father, definitely.
What a legacy that he gave you, and what a gift that he gave you, because it seems like a simple thing, like believe in yourself. We hear it's on all the T-shirts. But at the same time, it's actually a really difficult thing to believe that you have the ability to create a life by design, to create your dream life and to execute upon that. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you were able to leap off that foundation, you know, would have played a big hand in your success later on, which I'm now going to touch on, because it was in 2008 when you and your brother Justin took a bold step, introducing the US franchise Anytime Fitness to the Australian market. And together you transformed this into Australia's leading health club chain, boasting over 500 clubs nationwide, which, again, is seriously epic. I mean, you must look back and just pinch yourself in relation to what that journey looked like. Mm. Now, we could literally do a whole podcast episode on your journey with Anytime Fitness, but I'd love to try and consolidate this part of the conversation. Mm. And what I'd love if you could share is, in looking at your experience, what do you believe were the most significant you know, tools, character attributes, qualities that enabled you guys to scale Anytime with the rapid speed and velocity at which you did?
I think initially it was our ability to see something that nobody else saw. So the industry at the time was, there was no 24/7. It was, you know, very large gyms like Fitness First, and then some small, like, sort of, you know, really small non-branded kind of gym. So I think the first thing that I think we talk about when we get asked about this is we saw something that the industry didn't see was relevant. We were told by all of our industry peers that it wouldn't work, and that it was just in the US and you guys are crazy and you're going to fail. And so it was a real test of self-belief. There was 12 months of that testing while we were trying to get the rights. And I think we had each other, my brother and I had each other to rely on to go, like, you're seeing what I'm seeing, right? So I'm not the only crazy person. And I think that was a huge deal for us to have each other. And I think also just being able to trust ourselves, trust our gut, go against what everyone, like literally what everybody was telling us, that we, and these were smart, respected people that I was like, these people are smarter than me. But I was still like, I just think they're wrong.
Yeah.
We just had the instinct to go, this is the right time. It's the right brand. It's the industry is ready for it. And then when we launched, it was obvious from a consumer point of view that it was needed. So the industry was still very much in denial that this was going to work. But as soon as we launched the first club, second club, third club, and we had members going, this is amazing. Mm. We just knew that we were on to the next thing, what the industry, it was an industry evolution really. And we just worked really hard for the first few years. Yeah. It was just, you know, constantly hiring people and you know, and making sure that people that came on. I remember when we were interviewing, I would say to them, how do you deal with change? Because this is rapidly shifting, you know, month by month. So that we knew that we needed people that could adapt and could do multiple things. Mm. And I think we focused on the franchisee's success. And I've said this before, and I think that's really what made a difference, is we were focused on, if they're successful, everything is going to work.
Yeah.
Not, we weren't like, well, what is our profit? Where are we at? We were really focused on them being successful. Then they opened their second, their third, their fourth, their fifth. And that was a big part of our success, was they, the franchisees, were successful and went on to open multiple, multiple locations.
Mm.
And so I think all of those things, I think hard work, absolutely. Self-belief, 1,000% was what launched us, because without that, we wouldn't have done it. We just would not have even taken the step. And then I think we worked really well together. We are polar opposites, like polar.
I've heard you talk about that, but that kind of diversity actually worked for you.
It's what you need, right? Like you can't have two people wanting to do the same thing or good at the same thing. So I think that was a huge part of our success, especially in the early days, being able to really get it off the ground.
What do you think you learnt about shared purpose in that journey?
I think really trusting that the other person has got what they need to do and it's happening. We would never ever question each other. It was like I'm doing this and you're doing that. And there was just 1,000% trust that it will get done, and it always did. Mm. So I think that's a huge part of partnership, is clarity of who's doing what and trust that, trust and respect that they are the right person to do that, and you just let it go. And I think Andrew and I talk about that a lot in our relationship, which is being clear and open communication, but also working to your strengths, right? It's like, well, you're really great at that. You do that. I'll do this.
100%. And again, it comes back to that alignment to purpose, like really knowing what your DNA of purpose is and what are your unique skills? What are you bringing to the party? Yeah. Because if you know and understand that within yourself and understand what motivates and drives the other person, you can then leverage those skills and do what you're good at.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, Jack, it's obvious that fitness has always been an evident part of your journey, and you've just spoken about on that journey the importance of trusting your instinct and trusting your gut. However, I know for you that your journey, I guess, into spirituality, yoga, mindfulness, meditation didn't happen until around 2009, until you were trying to get pregnant. Correct. Can you tell me about this, I guess, turning point chapter in your life?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, fitness is very yang in its energy. So it's very, you know, I was trained really hard and I was always very focused and very disciplined. So there wasn't a lot of softness that I had around I guess my physical outlet or even spirituality. It was kind of definitely in the fringes. It was definitely something that I didn't talk about to other people. And it wasn't until I was trying to fall pregnant with Ari that the doctor recommended that I do yoga. And I just remember thinking I was going to hate it. I was like, this is going to be torture. And then I went, and then I started to really soften. I did a yin practice. I didn't even do a strong yoga practice.
Which is like the complete opposite.
of what I was used to. Yeah. And then I just started to realize how much better I was feeling, how much more access I had to, I guess, you know, peace within my body as well. And I think that was transformational for me. It was really starting yoga, and that was 2009. And then I quickly then dived into meditation, and I just found that it was enhancing so many parts of my life as well. And because anytime was so busy, it was the perfect time for me to be able to actually have some time to slow down and some to pause and remain clear on what we were actually doing, because it was so frantic, as well as being pregnant and having, you know, a young family at the time as well. So it was really around that time. And then I think 2010, 2011, there was a whole bunch of things that I tried and, you know. Things open up, and I think that was really the starting point of it, was realizing that there's so much more depth and there's so much more to learn around my inner dialogue and my inner world. And then that really helped me transform how I led as a leader.
Which was my next question. Love it. Yeah.
So I think, and that led me, that absolutely led me towards the Hunger Project and that work. And I feel like, you know, it's these small steps that we think sometimes aren't very big steps, but they lead us to places that we would potentially never have gone had we not have started to discover those smaller things that become very, very, very big things.
Mm. You touched on a theme there before with any time in relation to your purpose to empower others. And you were talking about that in the context of the franchisees. But you've also just mentioned the Hunger Project. And I do have a question about that a little bit later on. But I know that so much of the work of the Hunger Project is also about empowering others. What would be your advice to, you know, a leader out there who is wanting to really focus in on what it takes to create the right environments for other people to thrive? How would you go about that?
Well, I think firstly, knowing that everybody leads differently. And I think that, you know, we need to uniquely find how we lead, what is important to us, because then I believe we end up with the people around us that believe the same thing. And so I think our attunement to ourselves as in terms of how do I actually want to lead. It may not be the people around us may not be leading in that way.
Yeah.
So we may have to go outside of the box and go, I may need to go. For me, the work of the Hunger Project transformed the way that I led within my career.
Mm.
And that, but that's not a typical step that you would go to a non-for-profit working in hunger and poverty to learn around leadership. But that was where I guess, started to really uncover, actually, this is how I want to lead in my life. And then that came into my career. Because I don't think, sometimes in our corporate setting, we don't always see the leaders that inspire us to be different. And so sometimes it does take us to remove ourselves and have an experience of something totally different to be able to look back and go, actually, is that the right way for me to lead? Do I want to be like that? You know, and be curious about how have we been leading in the past. I mean, there's things where when I was a leading many of the businesses we had when I was younger, I wasn't a great leader, but I didn't also know a lot about myself. And I also
you don't know what you don't know.
And I had no reference points for other people that were leading in a way that I wanted. So we have to seek out those mentors or those organizations to really learn for ourselves what's important. And then I think that shapes and shifts our senior executive team and your board and where you kind of land, I think, gets shaped from that. But I think it's the internal, it's the inner work first to go, how do I want to show up? What are the things about me that I need to uncover? And where am I not aligned in the way that I'm leading?
And again, there you speak to the power of removing yourself from the day to day in order to be able to, you know, in your case with the Hunger Project, take yourself out of the familiar in order to be able to then gain the insights and the tools you need to bring back into your business. And I know this is something that you guys also do with Brave Spaces as well. We're going to plunge more into that. But before I do, I'd like to touch on a topic that we kind of covered off in our initial conversation and when we were, you know, prepping for today's interview. And we were talking about this whole idea of purpose as an evolution, as something that evolves with us and through us. Now, this was certainly true for you, given your background with Anytime Fitness, and then you made the decision to sell your part in the business before going on the journey to where you're at today with Brave Spaces. Now, I think it's always easy to highlight the polished parts of a story, and you know, obviously there are so many shiny parts to your story, but what I'd really like to understand here is the messy middle. You know, I often think of the analogy of the caterpillar becoming the butterfly, but you've got to go through that cocoon and you can't see out. It's mushy, it's gross. So what did that look like for you? What was that journey like in, I guess, unbecoming Jacinta, the co-founder of Anytime Fitness, letting go of that identity in order to be able to tune back in and to align yourself in the work that you're doing today?
Yeah, look, it is really messy. And I think that, you know, I knew that it was time to exit Anytime in 2017. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything beyond that. I just knew that it was the time. It was 10 years almost. I really felt like I had done what I needed to do and it was time for me to move forward. So that I'm really good at making that decision and acting on it without having to know. However, after I had decided to exit and exited, then I was in, you know, a place that I'd never been in my life, which is I don't know what I'm going to do now. And the unbecoming that you said is an amazing word. And it was that. It was because you just had so many people going, well, what are you going to do now? And I didn't know. And it was so frustrating for, it was for years that I would be like.
You feel like the blinkers are on.
No. And also just the, there was no pressure from the external, but I felt like there was pressure for me to go, well, what are you going to do? Like, you know, better be amazing, which is so stupid. But at the time, that
given
was.
Given the mountain you'd climbed was so high, too, it would have magnified that.
And I think, you know, for me, it was, what am I going to do? And, you know, I had a young family at the time. Their kids weren't very old. I ended up in a relationship that wasn't really healthy. So I feel like, you know, in that lost moment, we look to the external to try and find, you know, points of reference or validation. Or and so I had a really messy couple of years where, you know, I didn't make great decisions. I wasn't aligned. I was, you know, what Andrew and I speak about of angry, frustrated and stuck because I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And then COVID hit and, you know, so it was kind of
that
like...
just the, added that a whole like nother layer.
It was just like the cherry on
yeah,
top, right?
It really so go like, within
yeah,
now.
It was like, yeah, so that yeah. was really like, then that was really gritty.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's what's needed for us to really lean into and step into our true evolution is to go through that with, in the only way is through. There's no avoiding, there's no, because if we avoid, we know that it comes back tenfold somewhere else. So I think, you know, it was really, really hard. And it's one of the reasons I'm so passionate with about Brave Spaces, because we know that people exiting businesses or CEOs retiring, or there's just these big life shifts can be really challenging without the right framework and support. And so I definitely found that. I found that period in my life really, really challenging.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think it's in some part a reflection of our culture. And again, I think we spoke about this when we had our initial discovery chat. But we tend to struggle with death, essentially. And I'm not just talking about physical death. I mean yeah. just in the life. Cycle. Like there is this circle of life. Yeah. There's, you know, birth and we go around and things move in cycles. And yet in our own lives, we like the bright, glossy bits, the thriving bit, but we tend to block out all of the other components. And so I love that you're sharing your experience of this, not only from the perspective of helping people to, I guess, view the journey of purpose as something that does move in cycles and that changes us, but also in relationship to holding space for others with the work you're doing with Brave Spaces, because it feels like it's quite an important part of the process.
Yeah, it is. And I think people recognizing that exactly what you said, like it is a cycle. Nature has a cycle. We have we have deconstruction as much as we have construction. So knowing that to let go of things is part of life.
Yeah.
But there's also grief and sorrow which needs to be felt in that. And it's so, and I think our society is very much like, you know, we only look at the successful periods. We don't want to talk about, which I think is just stopping all of us from actually really truly going, this is a human experience that we're all having, which is we're not going to be happy and super fulfilled every day, but that's also part of the process. It's how we grow. Like how we grow and how we evolve is a lot of the time in the mushy bit, that we do come out the butterfly at the other side.
Yeah.
So recognizing that it is just part of the process, I think also makes people feel better that it's not just them. This is normal. So now sometimes when if I meet a founder that's, you know, exited or struggling, and I'm like, it's okay. Like, this is part of the process. You cared so much about this thing. Of course you're going to feel grief and sadness and loss and all of these emotions, because that's natural. It's like we think about it in a relationship, but we don't necessarily think about it in a career or in
exactly
a business. But it's the same. It's the same process of grief. And so
particularly when so much of our identity is so often formed around what we've created.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes we can focus so much on that, that in a way, even though it's grief and loss, when we go through these cycles, it is actually what's reconnecting us back to our essence and our truth that is not outside of ourselves.
And we get totally caught on, well, that's who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not, it's what we did something. Like even now I'm like, it's anytime I'm very proud of it, but it's something that I did.
Yeah.
It's definitely not who I am. And so I think there's that, there's a lack of identity when we start to exit things like that as well. So we're also dealing with the compounding effect. When people say, what do you do? You then don't know how to answer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, well, what I did was this and I don't. So it's
really, the wilderness,
it's the
isn't
wilderness.
It?
You're literally lost going, I don't know what to say. Yeah. I don't know how to navigate. And so, and I think that that was just such a hard time that Andrew and I talk about. And it's like, we want to take people on that pathway so that it's simpler and easier for them, so they don't have to be in the wilderness and struggle for so long.
Yeah.
That I know I did.
Which is one of the truly beautiful things about Brave Spaces is to have a container to go on that journey, because at the end of the day, you can choose not to go into the wilderness. But if the cost is your happiness and your fulfillment and what it is to live with purpose, that's a pretty big loss. I'd go into the wilderness. So, so to have a Brave Space, which you guys have created, is such a safe way to go on that journey and a connected way to go on that journey.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, I just think it's it's so important to have frameworks and tools to help us find our way in a more connected way, and also not get lost in the wilderness for years and years and years and years.
Exactly. So look, let's dive into the world of Brave Spaces. It feels like now is the perfect time. Now, as you know, I interviewed your beautiful co-founder, Andrew, a few weeks ago, and I can absolutely see why you have gone into business with him. What an amazing human.
Yeah.
So today we're gonna journey through the five keys of Brave Spaces, just like I did with Andrew. But I dare say that we will probably have quite a unique conversation. And I'm so excited to be able to go on that same journey, but through your lens. As a starting point, I'm wondering if you can share with our listeners your perspective on the work of Brave Spaces, with a focus on why this work is so important in the context of the world today, which often feels like the Wild West.
I think why our work is so important, well, for me, is we are so disconnected from ourselves, from each other. We can see all around us the impact of that in terms of mental health, in terms of what's going on in the world and within relationships. And I feel like we're not taught the things that we need to know. We're definitely not taught any of these tools to be able to thrive. And I just feel like that's just a lost opportunity for everybody, as individuals, as a collective, as a community. And it's really being able to harness these tools to be able to reconnect to ourselves, reconnect to our loved ones and our relationships in our community. And I think from that, there is a huge transformation that's possible. And so I think for me, it's just the lack of, there's two things. There's a lack of information around how do I actually do this? And then there's the over information of here's 100 different modalities that you could use. So then people are so lost and so confused. And the reason I love working with Andrew so much in the frameworks is because Andrew's been doing this for 10, 12 years. It's a proven path. I've seen the transformation in people's lives. So for me, it's just giving people a clear, concise pathway without all of the noise to be able to really embody these learnings. And I think that's something that we are hugely passionate about. It's not just you don't just read this and in your mind understand the theory of it, because that doesn't transform anything. It's the, can you embody this in your cells, in your body, to be able to then live this? And then I know the ripple effect that once we can impact one person like that, the impact is just massive. So that's why I'm so passionate about our work.
100%. And it's what I loved about your work as well, is this whole idea that, yes, you know, we can have a statement of why and have that kind of intellectual overarching directional statement that we think is our purpose. But if we're not feeling it, if we're not opening up the heart, if we're not using, you know, if we're not grounding in it, to use your language, in our body, then we're not really experiencing it at all.
Correct. And I think that's the issue, is people are like, oh yeah, like I wrote down my purpose like 4 years ago. And it's a lot of the time it's just a mental construct.
Yeah.
It's not actually a deeply rooted sense of, this is actually what I am here to do in the world. This is my unique purpose and this is how I want to express it. And I think the evolution of purpose that we've spoken about is that it gets expressed differently in our life. But generally our unique gift sits underneath it from birth.
Yeah.
And it just becomes out in different ways. Usually every 7 to 10 years is what I found, is like, oh, it now wants to express this way.
Yeah.
But I think we're not doing anybody any favours by not recognising ourselves what is our unique gift. And we're not taught that. We're taught to be like everybody else. We're not taught to be different. If anything, it's the opposite of what society is telling us to do. So it kind of feels like a rebellion against what we've taught, and sometimes against even the systems that I know some of our male clients were like, well, I've done all the things that I was told would make me happy, but yet I'm not.
I'm feeling completely disconnected. Yeah.
So, and it's kind of like a relearning and unwiring of a lot of the patterns that we've been given by others a lot of the time.
It's so true. And it's, you know, I think it's why so many, you know, you hear so many stories of people climbing the corporate ladder, getting to the top, but they're completely miserable because they haven't been able to do the work that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know, I've heard Andrew's version of this story, but I'd love to hear from you, your origin story, how you and Andrew came together and how you guys went about developing these five keys.
So I think I it's probably over 3 years now when Andrew and I met, and I had a friend recommend that I talk to Andrew. I was struggling with something at the time, and I remember the phone call that I had with him. I just remember thinking all of these things that I've been studying for 10 years in all these different modalities and ways and through meditation or whether it's through neuroscience. It was like it all came together in a conversation with Andrew. And from that point, I was just hooked on what are these frameworks that he's using? Like, how has he pulled this information to be so concise and allow me to really drop into my body and access all the things that I'd done in the past? And from that moment on, I was just fascinated with his approach. And so we worked together for a couple of years, and it was probably 18 months ago now, that we just were like, we need to do something
yeah.
with this. This cannot be so small and contained in Andrew doing one-on-ones with, you know, and having a huge amount of impact. The people need to know this stuff. And so that's when we started to go, okay, what are we going to do together? and we love working together, which is such a gift in itself, I think.
Truly is.
It really is.
You know, it's a kind of marriage, a business relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
You know, and for both of us, it's been, you know, we're super grateful to have, I guess, found each other.
Yeah.
In this respect and be able to really try and, like, scale this to so more people have access to the information that I believe they need.
Yeah. Amazing.
Let's pause for a moment. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you have been inspired by some of the world's most purpose-driven pioneers. Have you ever considered that you could be one? Have you ever contemplated expanding your influence through speaking engagements, writing a book, or launching a podcast, but you have no idea where to start? Well then, the Ignite Consulting process is your key to unlocking a purpose-driven personal brand and thought leadership strategy. Since 2014, my work has been to empower high-impact leaders to emerge as trailblazing authorities in a purpose-driven economy by accelerating their influence to create a better world. To book a discovery call, click the link in the show notes.
So let's dive into the keys. The first one is all around self-awareness. Yeah. Now, I was doing a little bit of research last night and came across several amazing articles that you have written. In one article, you said these words: "I think the most important action is self-awareness. As a leader, no one is offering feedback or telling you where you could do better. We have to be really, truly holding ourselves accountable and looking at ourselves and having awareness of how am I showing up? How did I run that meeting? Or was that a great decision?" Now, on one hand, you know, these seem like fairly simple questions to ask yourself as a leader, but the thing is being honest and self-aware in relation to how you answer those questions is a completely different thing altogether. And so what I'm wanting to know is, how do we cultivate the kind of self-awareness that allows us to kind of break down the ego in order to level up as not only a leader, but a leader in life?
Yeah. I think the first thing is we need to be curious. And I think anyone who is not open-minded or curious is going to struggle. Because if they just think it's black and it's white and there's no reflective ability to reflect back on, you know, Andrew and I talk about a reflective practice to go, well, today, not right or wrong, but how are my interactions and how did I show up and be able to observe? And then a lot of what we talk about is the observer self. And so can I be having this conversation with you but also be aware of my inner dialogue,
yeah.
right? Like what's going on up here, because that impacts how we communicate. And I think for leaders, the example I like to give is if you're in a board meeting and you are completely just focused on what you want to say and not aware of the actual room, who's in it, energetically, where everyone's at, you're going to miss all this information that's actually sitting in the room because you're not aware of actually Jane sitting in the corner actually looks like she has something to say that looks important. And so we miss out on opportunity if we are so in our ego and just, well, I'm running the meeting, I know the agenda I'm going to put forward, versus being open and curious to go, well, what do you think? And that self-awareness, that's being able to be the observer self whilst in a meeting. And that's just practice. Self-awareness is practice. Meditation is a practice, which is, can I observe what's going on while observing my inner world? What's happening inside, so I can then actually act proactively versus react. And I think that's the real work of self-awareness, and that's why we always start with it, because without that, it's like that's the foundation.
Yeah, you can't set an intention if you're not aware.
There's so many things that stack on top of it that it's impossible without self-awareness to actually go into these other things that we know we need to do to really level up.
Yeah.
And I think there's leaders that are absolutely curious to learn that, and then there are leaders that aren't, that is not where they want to practice or play, and that's totally fine, and that's their own
journey.
That's
their thing.
That's their thing. But for me, it was always, you know, without beating ourselves up, being able to look back and go, okay, well, I wasn't great in that situation, or I probably could have done that better without going into condemnation of self.
Yeah. Which it's about holding a space for two completely different things. The ability to embrace radical honesty in relation to where you can step up, while at the same time not dismantle yourself to do it. Yeah.
Correct. Which is why, you know, and that's why sometimes we say this is the work, because it's work. It's not easy. It's not easy work to be able to look at yourself and go, well, that was a bit shit. Like, I really didn't do that very well. And which is okay. It's also, again, it's natural, it's human. It's how we learn and how we grow and how we evolve. But I think we need to get rid of this idea of, well, I failed. It's like we didn't. We learned.
Yeah.
And so how do we embrace that with curiosity and self-love versus, well, that was terrible, I'm never doing that again. Which we will, of course.
And, I mean, it's very fitting that the business is called Brave Spaces, because this requires a degree of courage.
Absolutely. It's not for, you know, we say we're not for everybody.
Yeah.
Because it does take courage to go, I want to live differently.
And I think also that courage and vulnerability are two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely. And without the vulnerability of going, I haven't got everything worked out. And these are usually successful founder CEOs, to be able to go, I haven't got everything worked out is a new thing. Because as a leader, you're meant to have it all worked out, right?
Yeah.
You can't. You can't
be imperfect.
It's like I need to be. So it's having that space for them to be able to go, this is normal. This is what we all experience. This is our human nature. But how do we harness the true wisdom that's in our body, and how do we quieten down what we call the monkey mind,
the chatter,
right? It's like, how do we dull that and actually tap into, and then that's the game changer.
Yeah, okay. So once we've mastered is probably not the right word, it's probably a work in progress, but I'm going to say it anyway, mastered self-awareness, we then move into self-regulation, which from my understanding was really around our ability to influence our own thoughts, behaviours, emotions, or even to, you know, soothe our nervous system.
Correct.
Again, this is something that sounds easy in theory, but is actually incredibly difficult. So my question for you in relation to self-regulation is around what you do to maintain self-regulation as a practice, because I can't help but feel that in some ways getting good at self-regulation is a little like going to the gym. You've got to train for it, work hard at it. So what do you do? What do your practices look like in regards to how you become, I guess, psychologically fit, spiritually fit in relation to your ability to self-regulate?
Yeah. And it is a practice. This is something that we get better at as we practice it. And it happens all the time. There are many times in a day, usually, where you'll be challenged by an email or a text message or a phone call or something that's gone on that you're like, oh, that's crap. And so those are the little moments where we can go, okay, well, I'm feeling annoyed.
Yeah.
Okay, how do I just not let that take me off tangent and stay focused and stay in flow? And then those are the moments every day that we can practice to just tap into how am I feeling, okay, acknowledge whatever's gone on in my body and we can let it go. Because then when the bigger challenges appear, which we always have in life, we then have harnessed some of those tools to be able to go, okay, this is something that's really made me angry.
Mm.
Or I'm really frustrated, and then what tools have I already been using on a daily basis to be able to then really get through this big reaction? And I think for me, meditation is key.
Everything, yeah.
Meditation is absolutely key. Even just during the day, something comes up, just being able to tap into my breath, calm my nervous system back down, and recognize when I am in heightened, you know, I've been hyper or hypo, and then just getting to know. You know, window of tolerance is an amazing model that Dan Siegel did, which is just being able to know when I'm too far either way.
Yeah.
And then what do I need, what tools do I need to do to bring myself back into a more cohesive state? And for me, a lot of that is meditation and movement. For me, I know if I'm, sometimes I need to go for a walk just to clear my mind. You know, sitting there at the computer is not going to help me at this point in time. Or I'm going to go and meditate for 20 minutes. And then I'll come back and I'm in a much more coherent state to be able to then go, okay, let me think about this. But it's practice. It's daily practice. And it's not the big things that we generally say to people to start with. It's the driver in front of you that's super frustrating.
Yeah.
That you're like, well, that's life.
That's a good practice point.
It's a good practice point.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I can get frustrated or I could just let it go because I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's just those... recognizing it coming up and how do I just deal with this in the moment to let it go and then those when the big things happen we have much better tools.
Yeah, and I guess it gives us the ability to observe
absolutely
the trigger, but then also to have the consciousness to be able to transform that trigger into something meaningful in relation to how we grow.
Yeah, and I think I think it's self-regulation is recognizing we always have a choice.
Yeah.
How we react is always our choice, regardless of the situation or the circumstance. We love to point fingers at the external. We love to point, well, that's because they did that. But actually, our reaction is our reaction.
Mm.
And so remembering that, okay, well, I could choose to be frustrated in this situation, or what is another choice? And I think that that shift in agency for our brain to be able to go, hey, hang on a second, I can choose differently is something that we're not taught. So learning that is a huge game changer for me is to be able to go, well, I can continue to be frustrated or I could just figure out a way to really just let this go.
Mm.
So I think agency is a really big part of, for me, self-regulation, like I can choose different.
Yeah, yeah. So powerful. So, Jack, our next topic, our next conversation point revolves around connection. This is a funny one because on one hand you go, oh, okay, that's obvious, connection.
Mm.
But I really sat with it because I was like, what really is connection about? Do you know, I really sat with that question because I think, you know, and I'm just reflecting on my own experience of times where I haven't, for whatever reason, tapped into that sense of connection. Mm-hmm. Generally, that will start with me, my ability to accept myself, my ability to love myself, to step outside of like people pleasing, maintain boundary, all of that sort of stuff. And so I was really curious to understand a little bit more around your thoughts on the relationship between connection and our ability to accept ourselves and love ourselves.
I think connection, there's so much in connection.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It's a massive one. And I don't think we can truly connect with others ever unless we have come to terms with how we actually feel about ourselves. Mm. And this is one of the beautiful things about getting older is we have points in our life where we can go, I was really disconnected from self there, and look at what was going on in my life around me.
Mm.
And you can see clearly what's going on with your relationships with others, the choices that you're making when you're connected to self or when you're not connected to self. So it absolutely starts with that.
Mm.
So how do we do that is always the question. And it still comes back to self-awareness and self-regulation. Once we start to accept that this is how I'm showing up, this is what's coming up for me, I can choose differently, we start to really get to know ourselves. And that's the connection that I think we need to start with always is how do I feel about myself? Because a lot of the time that's where the issue is. And that's where things like meditation for me have been so important.
Yeah.
To be able to come back to self and to be connected to something beyond me, beyond what's perceived to be Jacinta McDonald, this body, is like, no, there's actually something much deeper.
There's a greater intelligence here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think once we learn more about ourselves, we can then start to trust more in our innate wisdom. Like, actually, how do I actually feel about that, even if the people around me are saying this? And that's where I think we start to really get into our true alignment. And that's where I think we actually draw people into our lives that are truly aligned. And I think that that's only from our knowledge of ourself that we can do that. And so it all starts with that.
It's that clarity piece again.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I love that you've referenced this greater intelligence because, again, if we're talking about purpose, I tend to view purpose as being like an energy in that sense. And it's about tapping into that greater intelligence that quite literally flows through our life, our being.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I often think about purpose as being in some ways like a healing paradigm, because when we do have those triggers come up, which we've spoken about, or all those things that could potentially distract us from our alignment, it's also inviting us into those things to be able to shift and move through those things.
Absolutely.
In order to be able to open up to this flow.
Agree. And yeah. I think that's where, you know, a lot of people work with us to get to purpose.
Yeah.
I just want to get to my purpose. And we're like, there's all these other steps before we can even talk about purpose.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Because it's
impossible without self-awareness, self-regulation and connection to actually go, well, what is my purpose? Because it's drawn from all of those things. And it's exactly what you said. Like, I truly believe that as well. Like, we are uniquely placed to do something in our life.
Yeah.
And so unless we get to know ourselves intimately, how are we ever going to discover what that unique purpose is? Because it's not, no one can tell us what it is. You can't think about it and go, I know, like I've had a thought, that's my purpose, because it's an embodied experience of, especially over time, as we get older, we get to refine it and to really get to know what does it feel like?
Which is so significant is just that question. What does it feel like?
What does it feel like? Yeah. And that's why a lot of the time we come back to, how do you know if you're on or off purpose?
Yeah.
Are you angry, frustrated and stuck? You're generally off purpose.
Yeah.
Ease, flow and enthusiasm. You're generally on purpose. Like, if we break it right down into how does your body feel, it's so easy to start to go, well, that definitely doesn't feel right. And this is feeling more towards what it is. And so we can use our body and our wisdom in our body to actually help us get clearer on what it is that we really are truly here to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the role of intuition in all of that? Because I've seen you write, again, you wrote a great article on the difference between ego and intuition, but I think now it's a good time to bring that into the conversation because I imagine that intuition is essentially what guides us towards
I think, you know, for me, intuition is, you know, it's about discernment. How do I discern what is my egoic thinking?
Yeah.
What is my brain's like, oh, you should do this, this and this and this and this versus I feel pulled to do this, which I believe is intuition. So for me, it's about energetically, do I feel contracted by doing this?
Yeah.
Do I feel like I don't have any options? This is, like, you should do it. This is what my brain's telling me to do, but my body feels contracted. Like, oh, it doesn't feel open. Or for me, intuition is, I feel absolutely pulled towards doing that. I feel completely open. And I think where people get stuck is they feel like that should feel easy, but a lot of the time intuition can still feel as scary as hell.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, well, that's scary. It can't be right. Because if it was intuitive, it would feel easy. And it's like, no, it can still be like, I don't know how I'm going to do that. I have no reference point that is going to work, but I still feel pulled to do it. And I feel like that's intuition to me.
Yeah.
Whereas the egoic thinking of what you should do, that generally has all the facts of why you should do it and the reasoning why it's going to work. But your body's like, no.
Yeah.
And so that's where people get stuck, because they're like, oh, well, if it was intuitive, it should feel easy. And I'm like, no. It can still scare the heck out of you because it's new. And it may be something that you've never, ever done. Like Brave Spaces to me is like, well, I'm had a fitness business.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, well, I've never done this before, but it's like the pull is so strong.
Yeah.
That you're like, well, this is just what I'm going to do and I'm going to work it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference to me. So intuition to me is energetically us feeling very open and moving forward. Whereas non-intuition or egoic thinking of like what I should do is it's contracted.
Got a contraction to it, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So then let's talk about purpose, which is the next pillar of Brave Spaces. Over the course of today's conversation, we've kind of tapped into, I guess, how our view of purpose is aligned, but is also quite different to some of the more traditional ideas around what purpose is. How do you guys work with this at Brave Spaces? What's the process here?
So the process is we've obviously gone through self-awareness, self-regulation and connection.
Yeah.
So we're in a pretty good, solid space to be able to really look at it. And we start by asking people what they're good at.
Mm.
And we always get the same response, which is people look up, they go blank. They find it very hard to answer. They can't articulate what they're good at because they're also not taught to talk about what we're good at. and so the
programming, we've got to bust open.
Yeah. And then what am I bad at? I can write like 5 pages of what I'm bad at. So we help them craft. And sometimes we have to get them to ask people close to them because it's like they cannot really articulate. Because there's a part of us that's like, well, I can't write that down.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm not really that good at it, even though we are. And then we help them go, like, what do you do naturally that other people can't do naturally? Like, what's easy for you that you're like, well, it's so easy. And other people are like, that looks so hard.
Mm.
And so it's recognizing within ourselves as well. Like, we think something's easy, so we think it's easy for everybody. But recognizing that's not actually true. Just because it's easy for you doesn't mean it's easy.
Mm.
And so helping them really refine what are their unique talents that seem to come out in work and at home. And I think that's an important thing is like what we're uniquely good at generally crosses over all parts of our life.
Into all areas of purpose.
Into all areas.
Whether that's parenting or work or whatever
and
it is.
And then we just help them, you know, and Andrew's incredible at using this framework in terms of being able to really distill it to a really amazing mantra where we're like, okay, that's really clear.
Awesome.
That feels like that's right.
Mm. And just the power of words. Words are heavy magic, right?
Power of words is really incredible to see people go, oh, that's it.
Mm.
Like that is actually what it is.
Mm. So powerful. And it's interesting just while we're on this topic that, you know, in different Eastern cultures, there's so many mantras, so many chants, ways of kind of being able to embody the divine, for want of a better word, in relation to our use of words. But we don't really do that in the West.
We don't. And we're not taught to, you know, in Indigenous cultures all around the world, we are taught to help you find your unique gift. Because we know collectively, well, we all have one, so we all need everybody's gifts.
Mm.
Whereas we don't do that at all here. In our culture, it's like, well, just, you know, do everything like everyone else.
Mm.
Don't be too different. Whereas in Indigenous cultures, it's like, well, you are the healer or you are the doctor or you are the, like, they are absolutely worshipped for the unique gift.
Mm.
And so for us, it's kind of unraveling all of that conditioning to go, no, there is something truly unique about you that's really, really special. What is it? Because we just don't do that.
Mm, so interesting. I'm so glad that we now have a space where we can. What have you taken away from Indigenous thinking and Indigenous wisdom? Because I know that is such a big part of the fabric of Brave Spaces.
Yeah, and I think that's why another reason why Andrew and I are so connected. I've spent a lot of time in Africa through the Hunger Project and through other travel, and I think just spending time in Indigenous cultures, seeing the way that they think, seeing the way that they view the world is so powerful. It's just so powerful, and it's just something that we need to seek out to be able to harness, like to be able to experience it. And that's why our Central Australia trips are so important. I'm going to Zambia with the Hunger Project at the end of the year and taking some people. So just to see the wall from a different lens.
Mm.
Gives us so much more depth of wisdom into ourselves as a you know, our human experience. But also question the things like, why do I have this belief? Like, where did that come from? And realize that it was just given to us and we've accepted them from when we were little, not rightly or wrongly by our parents, because they had the same thing happen to them. But it's like actually starting to go, that doesn't sit with me. That belief is not mine. I don't actually believe that. And I think that's the power of studying and being in the presence of Indigenous cultures. It enables us to go, this part of me is not actually me. Mm. I don't believe that. I've had that for 49 years, but I'm actually just going to set that aside. And there's such power in that.
Mm. Oh, and just the ability, again, in coming back to Brave Spaces as an integrated model, having the ability to develop the self-awareness to see the programming in the first place.
And that's why self-awareness is our foundation.
Yeah.
Because you can't see the patterning unless you have self-awareness to go, hey, what's going on here? Why do I believe that?
Mm.
You know, to hear the story that's going on, to think like, where did that story come from? Because that's not my story. But that's the unconscious, you know, dialogue that we have, you know, 70-80% of our day.
100%. And getting clear not only on the story, but what I call the story echo, which is like the emotions and the trauma attached to the story that can't shift until you bring an awareness to whatever it is that you've got going on.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's have a chat about integration, which is the final key. I absolutely love that you guys include this as a part of your process. Mm. The reason I love it is because to use a tree as a metaphor, you know, we see these big trees, but in order for them to grow tall and to expand, they need to be able to ground and send the roots further down into the earth. And I use that metaphor because I almost liken integration to that process, that it's one thing to have these wildly transformative moments or, you know, aha experiences that change everything. But if we're not able to ground that change, we're not actually able to step into the transformation we're seeking.
Absolutely.
What's your take on integration? How do we do it?
I think one of the reasons, Andrew, we're so passionate about having experiences and getting out of our daily life is I think that's where a lot of integration can occur.
Mm.
And, you know, whether it's into Central Australia or whether it's a retreat that, you know, we're hosting somewhere, it's to be able to be immersed in an experience so that in our body it's a felt sense. And I think for me that's the difference between, well, I read something, but I just read it.
Mm.
It's now in my brain as information. But it's not until we actually can embody it and feel it in our body as a felt sense that I actually think it gets integrated. And I think that's so transformational experiences like, you know, whether it's a retreat or whether it's time away, enable that. And I think that's one of the reasons I love traveling or love taking people. We're going to go out of your daily life and we're going to go over here because that's where I feel like your body is like, oh, wow, this is like, I'm not going to forget this feeling.
Yeah, you've anchored it in a completely different way.
Body. Like and I think for us it's really like, how do we make it at a cellular level? Something that's occurring because that's where transformation really, really happens.
Mm.
And I think that's where the self-awareness and the self-regulation piece is like, what's the felt sense in my body now? And being able to tap back into that is hugely important. And that's through all of our keys with, you know, we do that the whole way along, but integration for me is it embodied?
Mm.
Can I now see it playing out in my life? And once we start to see it, then it becomes something that just becomes part of who we are.
Mm.
And it's so important. I think without it, it's like it's just we learnt something.
Yeah.
Not going to change really a huge amount of our life if we just read something.
What's been your experience of working with clients in this process? Because, I mean, we've spoken today. I love yoga as well. It's just been such a gift to my life. And I think with those kind of practices, you do start to develop a sense of connecting with the physical body. But I also think generally so many of us are walking around like headless chalks. We have no connection to our body. What's been your experience of working with people in relation to where they're at when you talk about this idea of tuning into your experience physically?
Yeah. So for us, we do practices with them.
Yeah.
It's generally not yoga and it's generally not a guided meditation, but it'll be, you know, we've got an amazing practice we do, which was from an Indigenous elder that Andrew does, which is literally teaching people how to come back into their body and how to ground down so that they get a sense of feeling grounded, because then we can reference that to when we're not grounded.
Yeah.
Whereas if we don't have a reference of grounded,
you don't know.
You don't even know that you're walking around. And so it's teaching them that difference, is experiencing that difference, I should say. And so yoga is a great way to feel that, wow, I feel totally different after a yoga class, like I'm in my body. So it's helping people associate with, well, what's happening in your body right now? The questions that we asked all the time with clients. And they're like, oh, it's like, well, let's just stop for a second. And it's teaching them to recognize, oh, okay, this is going on. This is also going on. This is what, so it's learning the tools of like being able to map your body and map what's going on. It gives you, gives them the tool to come back to. And that's hugely important. Without that, we're just lost in, you know, the distraction.
Yeah.
So it's teaching them to have a felt sense of grounded, ungrounded, aligned, not aligned, and tap into emotionally and energetically what's going on in their body.
So Jack, I'm curious to know, how has Brave Spaces changed you?
I think for me, it's like putting all the puzzles together, the pieces of a puzzle. It's like I feel like I had the pieces, but some of them were connected, and then there was other pieces that were, you know, I'd learned something, but it was like sitting all the way away from me and it wasn't part of my experience. And so for me, it is it's been able to integrate and embody everything that I've learned today, which is, I think, a totally different experience to learning a few things that you do some of them well. So for me, it was bringing all of those learnings into a point where it's like, now it actually makes sense to me. And I think there's so much you can learn about neuroscience and epigenetics, and like you could go down 50
rabbit holes.
But how does it all come together?
Yeah.
And so for me, that's what Brave Spaces has done. It's like I've studied lots of different things, but it was like, and now I actually see how it all works. And I can see how if I do these practices and these tools, I can stay connected.
Yeah.
And I think because otherwise I would go on a retreat, you know, and then I'd come back and then I'd go back into my life, and all of what I did has just gone.
Yeah, it stays there rather than coming back into life with you.
This is really being able to integrate how I show up in my daily life every day in a different way is definitely what it's enabled for me.
Yeah. So what does your vision look like for Brave Spaces? Because I am so excited. I have to say, like, I love what you guys are doing. And so, yeah, where are you guys going with the journey?
We know we want to impact, you know, so many people. So we know we have to train facilitators to be able to facilitate the framework. So that's a huge focus of ours, is how do we build and support them in their growth. So we know we need to empower them first for them to be able to empower clients. So that's a huge focus of ours, is how do we teach them, how do they embody the frameworks and the work, and how do they then deliver that out is actually our true focus, because without that we can't scale and we can't grow and we can't impact lives. So that's a huge part of what Andrew and I talk about every day, which is how are we going to empower these facilitators, and how are we then going to empower further beyond that? Just very exciting.
Love that. Same theme that you've had all the way through around empowering others. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. We spoke before about the fact that the business is called Brave Spaces. What does bravery mean to you?
I think for me it is being totally honest with where we're at in ourselves. What are the things that we still need to learn? What are the things that we're struggling with? And being vulnerable to express that to somebody else. And being open to feedback. And for someone to say, well, actually, you know, this was a struggle for me, or like I'm struggling, you know, can we have a chat about that? And so it's being curious for me. Being vulnerable is absolutely, absolutely key to being brave. And I think it's that beautiful mix of stepping in even though we're not ready, but knowing that we'll find our way. I think it's teaching people that you're never ever going to know everything before you step in. But you also don't need to. You just need to take the next step.
You just need to jump. Yeah.
You just need to, and that's what a lot of what we talk about, is just stepping into a space to have a conversation that maybe we wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
Or stepping into an opportunity that we maybe wouldn't have believed that we could do. And so for us, it's really just taking that initial next step and using our intuition to guide us what that is, and being brave enough to trust that.
Mm, such incredible work. Is there anything that you feel is important to share with our listeners that you haven't already covered off on the podcast today?
I think it gets spoken about a lot, which is a lot of what we're experiencing, everyone is experiencing.
Mm.
And I think sometimes we get caught in the, well, that's just me. There must be something wrong with me. Or why can't I do this better? Or I'm so lazy. Or I'm so... And I think it's not true.
Mm.
All of those stories are not true, but we buy into them so easily. And I think for me, it's always reminding people that you have another choice, that you don't have to keep buying into the stories that are in our body, absolutely, like they're in our DNA from birth. But I think we forget sometimes that we feel like everyone's got their shit together and we don't.
Yeah.
And that's never true. Like, it's just never true. Everyone has always got stuff going on. So I feel like it's taking that veil off of we're actually all experiencing generally the same things. But whilst that someone else may look like they've got their shit together and you think that they would never have the issues that you have, they generally do. So I think it's that shared human experience.
Yeah,
that I always
100%.
Like to remind people of, is just like we're all the same.
Yeah. There's and sometimes that's the power of coming together in like in brave spaces, you
absolutely.
Know, of bringing people together and sharing our vulnerabilities and realizing that we're not all that different.
No, we're really not.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest is people put up a facade that everything's awesome and everything's great all the time. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
And if we can be vulnerable with people, we find out actually they'll share something and you were like, oh, I did not know that about you.
Yeah.
And that's where connection lies, is in that vulnerability and being brave enough to have a conversation that we maybe wouldn't have had. And I think that I always encourage people to have those brave conversations because they're the doors that open us to so much more of our potential. But we're generally too scared to have them.
Love it. So I've come to my last question for today, and it's simply this. If you had access to a global billboard and you could share like one phrase, one sentence, what would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good one. I think, you know, Andrew and I always say be brave, step in. And it would probably say that because to me that is – there's generally something that we really want to say or do and we're just not allowing ourselves to do it for whatever reason, whether it was going on in here, whatever someone's telling us. But if we truly just tap into our body and what's needed of us, we generally know what it is that's needed of us, but we're not brave enough and we don't step in. So I think that's probably what it would say would be brave, step in.
I love that. Yeah, I think the direct translation of the word courage is to speak with heart.
Yeah. And when we're not taught that, which is really sad.
Well, I hope that we get to see Brave Spaces in schools because I'd love my daughter to go through this program.
Yeah, well, we're launching a young adult program in the next few months, which will be sort of 16 to 22,
amazing.
24. Yeah,
well, what have you guys got going on? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we do. We have our Central Australia retreat, the first one sold out. So there's another one in July, end of July. We've got a Byron Bay retreat we're about to launch in the next few days, which will be in October for people that can't get to Central Australia. And they're the two. And then some online programs and some, a lot of self-paced stuff coming up as well. So there'll be a lot in the website in the next six to eight weeks.
Amazing. And where can we find the website?
So bravespaces.com.au, as you can see everything that we are doing. So we're very excited to launch a number of different things over the coming months.
Amazing. Well, I will be certainly watching closely. Jack, thank you so much for joining me on the DNA of Purpose podcast. It has been an absolute joy to have you in the studio with me today.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, as always, for dedicating your time
to the DNA of Purpose podcast. As we conclude today's episode, I invite you to extend the conversation online. Feel free to reach out via LinkedIn or follow along at Rebecca Maklad, that is M-A-K-L-A-D, on Instagram, where we're crafting a tapestry of stories, reflections, tools, and insights to empower your purpose-driven leadership strategy. I love feedback, and we always welcome guest suggestions. Should today's episode ignite a spark within you, reviews really do help us to continue to attract the world's most prominent purpose-driven leaders as our guests. And if you know somebody who would benefit from one of our episodes, then share that story with abundance.